Welcome back to Zotpay Cycling Podcast. We are back after 2.5 months, and today we will do a top 10 climbing performance podcast as we did last year. We have 10 climbing performances, one per each climb, and we will start with some honorable mentions.
This year, a lot of climbing performance started a bit slower. The first one of the honorable mentions is the Rubén Guerrero Mont Ventoux in the one-day race. Put out a big performance, nearly 6 watts per kilogram for 58 minutes 36, which was also one of the fastest times on the Mont Ventoux.
I think it was third fastest time on Mont Ventoux in a road race after Marco Pantani
and Lopez.
Miguel Angel Lopez last year. And this was, for me, this was like one of the most surprising performances this year. Like, I knew Rubén Guerrero can climb, but this was close to, like, this was peak Tadej Pogacar level, let's say, maybe even higher. That race
was
fucking
hot. Also, this was a one-day race, so we need to look at that. We haven't really seen
Pogacar in a one-day race like that. Before that, he did the Criterium Dauphiné, and he had only one rest day.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, people say this is a one-day race, but it's like in Grand Tour, it'll be start of the second week, so it's like
the first one, Santa Cristina, which was also after rest day, so comparable to that. Then we had Maurizio Moreira dominating Portugal. He was ill in the Volta Portugal, but still won, where FAPEL Glass Drive, or now Glass Drive, last year FAPEL, did a 1-2-3. He wasn't all that good there, but then in the second biggest race, Jornal de Noticias, he performed at 7.14 watts per kilogram for 13 minutes 23. Yeah. Impressive performance.
This is the only Portuguese Conti performance in this list. Originally, Naishka had this performance in top 10, but I somehow convinced him that it isn't a top 10 performance because the stage was extremely short, like 60 kilometers, 70. So it was extremely easy, and it's a fucking... Is it a UCI race even or not?
I'm not sure.
it might be at the best 2.2 UCI race or even not the UCI race. So yeah, and the last two honorable mentions are from Remco Evenepoel's Volta España. The first one is on Colau Fanquaya in stage 8, where he didn't drop. I think Roglic and Mas still was in his draft. But he did all the hard work. And the second one from Remco in honorable mentions is on Peñas Blancas, which was also a perfect stage, with very easy start until the climb. And the climb was in, I think, close to Malaga.
Low altitude.
It was a really good surface, I remember. The asphalt was right there. He did their estimated 6.19 watts per kilo for almost 45 minutes, but didn't drop many guys because, again, it was 6 or 7% gradient, and he just rolled in his defensive, I don't know, form.
Because he obviously already had a rather large gap at that point. I think nearly 3 minutes to Mas and Roglic. So let's jump into the top 10, I would say, with Jonas Vingegaard, the best climber of the year. And this is, his first big performance of the year on Plateau de Solaison in the Critérium du Dauphiné Stage 8, which he won the stage. And Jumbo already dominated that day with, Steven Kruijswijk, probably his best job of the year with huge pull. He dropped everyone except Ben O'Connor and his two leaders, and they just went crazy then for a few minutes until Roglic kind of started slowing down and dropped, and Jonas had to wait. But still, even despite that, they had a huge performance, 6.32 watts per kilogram for 34 seconds for Jonas. Roglic was a bit less because it was obviously drafting. And also, Big heat that day, 30 degrees, so huge performance.
Yeah, like this is the first sign that Jonas might win Tour de France, actually. And yeah, that Roglic might not be even the Jumbo-Visma leader because he suffered on the climb. And Jonas, if he wanted, he would just easily drop Roglic. So yeah, like, okay, maybe he wouldn't win the GC because Roglic still had like 40, 50 seconds. But yeah,
you could probably put 50 seconds into Roglic and Bezzel as well.
Oh, come on, like then he would need like 6.6 watts per kilo or something like crazy.
They slowed down really a lot at the last, but like they had already, like with 3 kilometers to go, they had like 30 seconds on Ben O'Connor, and then he got back to 15
seconds. Oh yeah,
seconds.
You're right. Okay, it would be close, but yeah, Roglic maybe would break mentally, like on the La Plange de Belfi stage in 2020 Tour de France, maybe like because if you are dropped, you also mentally suffer, probably, especially Roglic.
Yeah,
he sucked this year. There is no performance by Roglic on this list.
This is probably his best performance, like
this is his best, and he even couldn't drop Dani Martinez in Paris-Nice.
Yeah,
and yeah, this is maybe his downfall year, and we'll see.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
he
we also didn't really see him in full shape in Grand Tours, obviously, but like his other performance seemed definitely worse than the last year's.
Okay, the ninth place is Jai Hindley on Paso Fedaya. This is the earliest performance on this list.
In the top 10, yeah.
Yeah, in the top 10. So imagine after, like, until Giro.
Actually, I think the
Remco one was earlier in Norway.
Yeah, the Norway was like in like 3 days before.
Okay, this is, yeah, like imagine after, like before Giro's week three, there was no high performances which are on this list. Yeah, like somehow.
And that's really different to last year where they had like a lot of very fast start with high performances in Tirreno as well.
Yeah.
And this year was really not that spectacular.
Jai Hindley, this is the stage where Jai Hindley won the Giro d'Italia by dropping Richard Carapaz on Passo Fedaya climb, which is like high altitude and very steep, 5.3 kilometers and over 11%. And he did on this climb 6.51 watts per kilo for almost 19 minutes, but didn't break the record, which was by Enrico Zaina from 90s, I think.
No, Buño was the record, I think.
No way, Buño was fucking like heavy, I think.
Oh yeah, it's Zaina, damn.
Yeah, because Buño is always like, for me, like a time trialer, like a heavier rider. Yeah, it's Enrico Zaina, and that Zaina was faster by 23 seconds than Hindley in 1996 in Epo era. But
Yeah,
Hindley just completely destroyed Carapaz by putting more than a minute to him. Like he was by 1 minute and 28 seconds faster than Carapaz.
And the funny Carapaz also like tackly like was really bad that day. Like he blew up completely after Kamna did a good job as a satellite rider.
No, and the funny thing was that Ineos fucking his team paced very hard and practically destroyed the Carapaz's legs, and
Kamna
just finished the job with his pull. But I think like Kamna's pull is overrated because it was like 11-12%. But okay.
Next up we have place number 8, Remco Evenepoel once again on Gaustatoppen, Stavsero, Tour of Norway. The crazy performance that not many people expected. I don't think even we didn't expect this at this point in the season.
Because when you calculated, I couldn't believe those numbers because it seemed too high also for Jay Vine, but those guys proved later in the World of España that your calculations wasn't wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, it was especially crazy because Remco like they couldn't climb at all in the first part of the season. And even Mike Motibi, like Valenciana lost 40 seconds to Vlasov. Then in Tirreno, he lost like 4 minutes to Pogacar in the Queen stage. And then suddenly, he did a great performance here, a very great performance. drinks also in the trend lines a generational. So that was crazy to see that.
Yeah, I'm very into performance by Remco, but this wasn't even his second or best performance this year, which is even more crazier.
Yeah.
This is his, I think, fourth performance best, because the next on this list is again Remco Evenepoel, seventh place on in Volta España on Les Prieres climb, which is a fucking steep climb, like over 13% and 3.7 kilometers. And he did 6.83 watts per kilo for more for 15 minutes, which is crazy. But he, I think he blew up at the end.
Slowed down at least.
Yeah, but because he still beat everyone by big margin. So yeah.
Yeah, he went absolutely crazy when he dropped everyone off the wheel on this climb, like right at the start or very close to the start, and then probably blew up a bit at the end, because Ayuso was definitely getting closer at the end when he finished like I think 36 seconds down or 34 seconds down in the end. And at some point, it was over a minute down. Yeah, crazy, especially because it was a hard day in the heat as well. And the day before that was also the Fanquaya, which was an honorable mention. So two successive big performances on climbing stages.
Yeah, Remco proved that he can perform also on like steep climbs, because he got watts per kilo. Yeah, this is a great day for his fans, because Roglic lost like over 1 minute, I think.
I think it's like 50 seconds, 55.
Okay, like imagine Roglic, who is like king on these kind of climbs, on really steep climbs, lost 54 seconds, okay, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot on such a short climb, even if it is that steep.
Okay, the sixth place is the only mention in this list by Tadej Pogačar in Tour de France on Mende climb, which is again really similar to the Las Prieres, like 3 kilometers and 10.3% steep. Yeah, Pogačar just was pacing hard practically, and the Vingegaard was just sitting in his draft, not doing everything. And the crazy thing, he almost broke the Marco Pantani record from the 90s.
They were really close to it. 9 minutes and 5, they rode on the climb. In 1996, Pantani did 8 minutes 59. And I think Rees and Indurain had 9 minutes. So, but after them, it's the fastest time ever on this climb. And they also slowed down in like, maybe last 100 meters when Pogačar looked around twice, I think, to Vingegaard. So
maybe if Jonas wanted, he could have broken this record. But
Jonas looked really easy on the climb.
No, and the craziest thing they did, like Pogačar did 7.36 watts per kilo, and Jonas in the draft did by 0.1 watts per kilo less. So yeah, crazy stats.
Yeah, crazy performances that day as well. But wasn't enough for Pogačar, who couldn't really get his Granon lost time back at all in the tour.
Yeah, because Jonas was in his like best shape ever in like Tour de France in 21st century, maybe. Like you could discuss if Contador was better in 2009.
Yeah, it's probably between those two, I guess.
Yeah, because in 2009 there weren't many climbs.
Yeah, and all Contador only, like the only time he went full, it seemed like, was on that climb on Verbier.
Yeah,
because on like the first mountaintop finish was Andorra, and they were pretty slow until like last 5 minutes, where Contador attacked and gained a bit of time. But then they also had like Colombia, where Morvan 2 in Colombia, he was just following Andy Schleck, pretty much. Moving on to the fifth spot on the list. Highest placed UAE rider on the list, not Pogačar, it's Brent McNulty, for his performance on stage 17 of the tour, where he destroyed Col de Valouron Azay climb 6.58 watts per kilogram for 22 minutes 24 seconds. Crazy performance, dropped everyone except the two dominators of the tour, Pogacar and Vingegaard, who stayed in the draft. Pogacar tried to attack once right at the top, but Vingegaard didn't show any weakness. And then on the last climb, McNulty once again had the highest watts per kilogram road at the front for the entire climb except the last 400 meters, which was a super steep ramp. Yes, this had the highest watts per kilogram there, 6.23 watts per kilogram on the climb for 23 minutes. And yeah, Pogacar almost definitely seemed weaker that day than McNulty.
Yeah, this was extraordinary performance by McNulty. And why the fuck I did say that? Yeah, this was great performance by McNulty, and it's crazy that he could drop on 8% and Geraint Thomas and other climbers like Sepkus. I mean, yeah, this is for American climbers, this might be one of the greatest performances ever, actually.
Yeah, it's very impressive that day, but he couldn't, it was still okay on the next day, but he couldn't replicate that performance again or before in his career, so we'll have to see if he can ever reach that level again.
Yeah, he's more like a one-day racer. He's really great in one-day races, like in Tokyo Olympics especially, where he blew up, but was close to getting that medal.
And also early in the season, I think French one-day race, I can't remember the name.
Ardèche, Pon Ardèche, yeah, I Ardèche, think it's called.
Pon Ardèche, and also Classic, where he won and put in a big performance.
Yeah, he also won the first UCI race, which is about first category in Spain, in Mallorca. Then he won a breakaway stage in Paris-Nice, where he dropped Mattia Jorgensen and other guys from breakaway. Like, yeah, he can perform, but in Grand Tours, this was like by far the best performance. And yeah, he didn't do anything in Volta. In Volta, I think he didn't even finish in top 20 in any stage.
He was at the Vuelta?
Yeah, he was completely horrible. He didn't do world championships after that. Maybe he was too tired after the season. But the next one on this list is again Remco Evenepoel, like for the third time in top 10. And if you include mentions, it's like already fifth time. This is his performance from Classica San Sebastian on Erlite's climb, 3.9 kilometers, almost 11%. And he did 7.25 watts per kilo for almost 12 minutes, which is fucking crazy. He dropped
it's crazy.
From his wheel Simon Yates. He dropped so many guys. In this race, even was Juan Ayuso and Tadej Pogacar, who both were dropped on the previous climb, where the pace wasn't even that high. And Remco was... He won by almost 2 minutes this race, and he could go even won by even larger margin, but he didn't care in the end. But he's because like why the fuck you should risk it? And it was like completely what the fuck performance by Remco.
Yeah, it's the highest watt per kilogram performance of the year.
And this was only his only race before Volta España. Yeah, he didn't do Volta Burgos, and it paid off. And but after this performance, I knew Remco would probably win Volta if he can stay good for 3 weeks, which he
I remember I tweeted after the race that Remco should be the favorite to win the Volta, which was a good prediction. But impressive performance, especially because after this huge watt per kilogram performance, he had still had 45 kilometers to go, where he did a huge solo and obviously extended his gap on everyone else to, I think, 1 minute 58, if I remember correctly. And that is the biggest winning gap in San Sebastian since Miguel Indurain in 1990.
Yeah.
Where he won by like 2 minutes 20 or something.
The next performance on our list in third place is Jay Vine and Remco Evenepoel on Pico Haño stage in Volta España, which was the first serious mountain stage in Volta España. And this was maybe the most surprising performance this year. Yeah, where Jay Vine beat everyone from Peloton, not even from a breakaway, but from a Peloton. Yeah, he attacked very early on this stage, not on this stage, but on the climb, because the pace was quite slow. Yeah, he did 6.58 watts per kilo for almost 30 minutes, which is, again, generational performance, by far the best performance in J1's career. Okay, he also did great on the Tour of Norway stage, but yeah, this was one level above. Yeah, and yeah, no wonder he will be riding next year for UAE Emirates, where he might be the best climber, maybe at least in top three, because there's also Tadej Pogacar and Juan Ayuso.
Right.
Yeah, they have many great climbers.
Yeah, I think considering the performance of Tour of Norway, probably it's not as surprising as Pignalti, I would say.
Yes, but yeah. Like, I would say for the general public, it was surprising because, like,
yeah,
fuck cares about Tour of Norway and no one understands what's per kilo. But for us, yeah, it wasn't that surprising, but it was like a sign that, the calculations are right.
Yeah, it was a great performance, and also by Remco Evenepoel, obviously, who was even stronger, because he attacked later than Jervine, and Jervine already had a gap, and Remco was longer in the like slow peloton, and then gained a lot of time on Vine in the last 3 kilometers, especially. He finished 15 seconds behind, 6.5 watts per kilogram. It is third generation. Performance of the year, that's more than any other active pro in his career, so he did that in only 1 year, so he's off
months.
To some crazy shape, and obviously that's the craziest thing, and it's like already he is as many as I think Contador and Armstrong and other impressive climbers.
Yeah, it's very impressive, and yeah, blah blah. But also, Marc Padun was really great on this stage, but the problem was the breakaway was caught, because Marc Padun did the great performance on the previous climb before Pico Hanyo, where he dropped everyone for a breakaway. He did like 6.6 watts per kilo for 18 minutes on Brenes climb, I think it was called. And yeah, it was very unlucky, because that might be actually one of the best performances ever from a breakaway rider that didn't win a stage.
Yeah, probably. Like, that has to be up there, definitely. Like, he would did a lot of watts per kilogram there. But yeah, moving on to spot number two, and for the first time, and it's not Remco Evenepoel, the one climber that was better than him this year, Jonas Vingegaard, on the Col du Granon, where he obviously put 3 minutes into Tadej Pogacar and pretty much sealed the TDF. At that point, and I mean, it was a crazy start stage from the start. We had the Telegraph, the Galibier, and then the Granon mountaintop finish. Jumbo attacked with Roglic already on the Telegraph. They were like in a really small group rolling attacks on the Galibier, where they did like 5.5 watts per kilogram for 50 minutes to altitude. Jonas and Pogacar a bit more, because he was traffic a bit less. It also attacked multiple times on that climb, which probably wasn't that smart. But then on the final climb, obviously Jonas attacked with pretty late, actually, with 4.6 kilometers to go. Probably if he attacked early, he could have maybe gained 5 minutes, because Pogacar was completely done, while Jonas still did nearly 6.5 watts per kilogram in the last 15 minutes.
For the whole climb, he did 6.1 watts per kilo for almost 36 minutes.
Yeah, too high altitude.
Yeah, it's very high altitude. Like, the top was like 2,500 meters above.
2,408, I think.
Okay, yeah, so it was really high and extremely high performance. He did destroy everyone on this stage. And yeah, as you said, if he would have attacked earlier, his gap would be even bigger. But he was probably like afraid, because at this point, everyone still thought that Tadej Pogacar is almost invincible, because it's fucking Tadej Pogacar. But as proven, like, Vingegaard already like dropped him very hard on Mont Ventoux in the previous Tour de France. But in that stage, there was a descent, and Tadej Pogacar gained back and everything on descent. Yeah, and again, Jonas, for the second time, just completely put Tadej in a coffin. And
yeah,
with like six nails, and it was done. He was buried like 6 meters below the sea level.
And then he probably buried him 12 meters below the level.
If you're listening on podcast platforms or Spotify and Apple Podcasts, please give us 5 stars. It'll really help.
First performance on our list, Jonas Vingegaard on the Ota Kamway. Once again, everybody, including Tadej Pogačar, one of his best performances ever, but still got destroyed because Jonas went crazy, Jumbo went crazy, Benoit and Vaart went a break as satellite riders. And the entire day was crazy fast. They did like 5.1 watts per kilogram for 50 minutes on Obisk. Then Spandau's climb, the penultimate, was 6.17 watts per kilogram for 30 minutes for Jonas. And then Pogačar had a bit more. And Pogačar also attacked 4 times. So the normalized power would be much higher on that. And then last climb of the day, Ota Kam, 6.32 watts per kilogram for 36 minutes 30 from Jonas. Pogačar just over a minute behind the next rider, I think 3 minutes or something. It was crazy gaps that day. And Jonas actually even rode the last 3.5 kilometers or around that. He rode even the last part of the climb, he rode faster than the Bjarne Riis in 1996, last 4.5 kilometers, when Bjarne Riis obviously did probably the greatest performance in cycling history with 6.9 was bigger up for 35 minutes.
Well, it's at least in Tour de France, definitely the best performance ever by Riis. And yeah, Jonas, like, this performance is great because not because he did like such great values on the final climb, but because the stage was extremely hard. They went like full gas already on Spandels, and also, the first climb was kind of hard, and this is the third week in the Grand Tour, and the Tour de France was fucking hard even, and yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was like also the hardest Tour de France we've seen in ages. So it's crazy what he did at that point in the race. Like, you just see by the gaps on that stage where even like Thomas had career values in this tour, career best values, and yeah, how far behind did he finish? 2:54. Like, that's crazy.
And the previous day also was really hard. The previous day was the Col de Azay, Goddess, the McNulty performance, and it's crazy. Yeah, like
it's crazy.
Yeah, so some great climbers like Nairo Quintana lost more than 5 minutes. Well, and his performance was then disqualified because of Tramadol. Tramadol, I forgot how to pronounce the drug, but 5 minutes, and Alexander Vlasov lost 4 minutes, and
and that was his best performance probably ever from Alexander Vlasov.
this year,
who Alexander Vlasov obviously was also in the breakaway 2 days earlier, lost like minutes to the breakaway riders. But still managed to gain something on GC, so he could end up finishing fifth, which he obviously wouldn't have without breakaway time.
Jonas was... I can't wait what he will do in 2023. Yeah, again, Jumbo versus Tadej Pogačar in Tour de France, very likely. Remco is a coward and chose to ride Giro. Yeah, where he should easily win Giro, but if he will lose, it will damage his reputation like badly. He cannot afford to lose Giro. But
okay. And also in the Giro, there are like more things you need to watch out for, probably because they're like insanely cold weather, crazy conditions, wet descents probably, and like multi-mountain stage where you can get blow up or something stupid can happen, which you might lose the race even if you are the strongest, which usually doesn't happen in the tour.